Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time to bring back again the goddess of grains herself, Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. What's up, Angie?
Oh, not much. Just like usual, living the dream out here in flyover states,
yeah,
country.
You're always living the dream. That's who you are. And so, Angie, We got trouble in River City. That's in Iowa, right? We got trouble. The Music Man.
Right.
We got trouble right here in River City. What the heck is going on with the grain markets? Give us the skinny. Tell us what the hell's happening down there.
Well, we're waiting to find some buyers. Basically, I don't know. I'm a little bit. I'll probably say this and instantly regret it tomorrow. But I'm a little bit excited or happy or. I guess not disappointed in wheat's performance today. So $4 September wheat's what I've been really watching close. 425 beast, right in that level is what I've been watching as a support. I was hoping we would have held 4.25 on the step, you know. So we've moved a lot lower than what I'd anticipated, but we've dropped real hard. And I think wheat really, you know, looking back on the 07-08 market structure and things like that. You know, that was back before ethanol really had kicked in and prices had seen an upswing and then fallen back. And really wheat was kind of the whole driver to start the rally that we saw that went from 07, you know, pretty much to 2013. Of course, we had the drought in there and stuff like that. But wheat is really what I'm watching this year, kind of maybe, you know, history very never repeats itself, but it often rhymes kind of deal. And I think there's a lot of structure, a lot of story, and a lot of fundamental changes that have taken place at the core of the wheat market. But the problem is right now everyone still has this huge global stock mindset and this huge, you know, rumors of the Russian crop growing by a billion bushel over current estimates and, you know, things like that. So it's one of those things where the negativity continues to beget negativity in wheat, but we finally saw today we tested that 395 range, looking like we may try to work our way towards 380 or so in Chicago wheat here on the September board, and we actually closed above it and above $4, which I think is a positive psychological factor, and you saw spring wheat close over 20 cents off its low as well today. So I'm not saying that's the sign that we're out of the woods here, but I do anticipate long-term that wheat should bounce back. I think we're, you know, 50 to 75 cents too cheap at this point, based on the market itself. And then me as a cash trader, I'm seeing a lot of really interesting things develop with basis and spreads. And in the market, you tend to say basis, then spreads, then futures. So basis tends to firm first. Then you start to see your spreads firm, taking away that carry, and then futures tend to rally. And we definitely are seeing the first step of that with basis firming, you know, almost 50 cents here in the last 2-3 weeks since harvest has wrapped up here in Michigan. So that's been real interesting to watch.
All right, so explain what basis means to everybody.
Basis is the difference between cash price and futures. So it's basically a function of local supply and demand. So your futures is your, you know, overall whole world market, fundamentals, technicals, blah, blah, blah. Basis is just a fundamentally local supply and demand. So it kind of is your gas versus your brake, on if you really need supplies and the futures market isn't doing it and you want to try to encourage people to sell to you, of course, you're going to firm your basis or improve that cash price you are paying, you know, whereas if you have too much locally and need people to kind of take their grain elsewhere, you do the opposite and widen your basis. So right now we are seeing people firm and really improve that cash price they're paying wheat mills when I say people, I mean wheat mills, are really firming here as of late and improving the value they're going to pay for local or nearby wheat, which is quite rare this time of year. Usually this time of year, elevators are looking to dump supplies ahead of soybean harvest to make room for soy and corn harvest and stuff like that. So usually you can't even deliver what you have sold because everyone's full. This year it's different. Mills are still calling, wondering if you have availability. We have one local mill that is still actually taking supplies out to their secondary storage facility, basically meaning that they haven't even gotten enough to fill their first facility, let alone move to their next facility. So it is showing, you know, of course we expected production to be lower, but from what I'm seeing now that stuff has been kind of squirreled away, it's quite a bit lower than had been anticipated. And I think that's what you'll see. So everyone got really negative about wheat. You know, suddenly you started hearing, oh, we've got more than enough available supplies. You know, the USDA didn't adjust production numbers lower, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's important to keep in mind that we saw market moves take place that we hadn't seen for 2 years. So, of course, the pipeline was full. You saw commercial wheat come out of storage. You saw farmers selling grain that they've been holding onto for years. And you saw harvest at the same time. So now is the time where that pipeline, that full pipeline, you know, now that the price has dropped and basis had widened a little bit and spreads had improved in order to encourage holding onto it as a commercial, now the easy stuff's going to be gone, and I'm venturing that we're going to see a pretty substantial shift from, you know, the pipeline being full to people wondering where all the wheat has gone.
Which is very often the case in these markets, and of course, mm-hmm. What about the light volume? Does that concern you at all?
No, not really. I mean, it could, but I'd prefer to see, you know, less people in actively selling this market right now. You know, it just kind of tells me that, you know, of course we have no real interested buyers, but the energy or the excitement around selling is starting to back off a little bit.
Now, who is selling this market right now, in your opinion?
I think farmers, you're seeing a lot of farmers. You're going to have to see a lot of farmers selling because the most places will offer things like free storage until August 30th and stuff like that. So farmers are having to make a decision here, going into the end of the month on what they're going to either sell or put on storage or delayed pricing or something like that. And then I think you still have some speculative sellers. I mean, like I said, there was a wire that floated around this week that was suggesting the Russian crop could work its way up towards 90 million metric tons. Like I said, that's a over a billion bushel higher than current estimates. You know, I've talked to some of my connections there that handle the Russian trade, and there's no foundation in reality. Like, that's just a you guess it sort of deal. But, you know, everyone seems to have this idea still in place that, and I said it today on Twitter about these, you know, all these global markets, the stocks are so burdensome, you know, yada, yada, yada. Well, you look at Russian production and you look at Chinese stocks, and those are the two things right there, you know, that you could use as a bearish argument. The fact is Russia is still Russia. Yes, they may be providing Egypt. They may bring in some competition, you know, from a global standpoint, but our exports are not hurting here in the U.S. I mean, we've seen a pretty solid start to the marketing year from an export standpoint, and China is supposedly holding on to 48% of the world's wheat.
Hold that thought. Okay. China's 48% of wheat. And that's our friend Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, and she was brought to you by BarkBox.com. She's a customer. We're both customers. And, of course, they deliver dog treats and snacks and toys to you every month. And, of course, they're offering you one free month if you go to GetBarkBox.com/TheBubbaShow. Again, that's GetBarkBox.com/TheBubbaShow. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz, LibertyTalk.fm. You can download the show every single day. Make sure you go ahead and do that. We'll be back after the break with more from Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz, coming right back. Well, Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess herself, the goddess of grains on Twitter, and, of course, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, so you're talking about China and their 48, whatever, yeah, trillion, billion, whatever the hell they got. Go ahead. What do they got?
Well, they have 48% of the world's wheat. So they have nearly half of the world's wheat on hand, supposedly. You know, and I just read an article a couple weeks ago about some pretty extreme concerns over potential cadmium and other contents in their wheat. So basically, there's a lot of their wheat that may not even be usable due to pollution and during their production, or just purely being stored in less than ideal locations. So, you know, the question there, of course, is of that 48% of the global stock, excuse me, for one, how much is even usable for the Chinese people? And for two, when it comes down to it, it's not going to make its way into the global pipeline. You are not going to see China start exporting wheat in a large quantity.
Right. So, but I mean, again, Russia, China, you know, I've been doing this for so long, longer than you've been alive. And whenever they needed something to happen, they go, China's doing this. It's always China because they're hidden and nobody really knows what China's doing. Does anybody really know what China's doing?
No. I've never personally seen, you know, where this 48% of the world's supply is. I mean, you're talking over 100 million metric ton. I think 127 million metric ton last I saw, which would be 4.7 billion bushels of wheat, you know, in addition to their 4 billion bushel of corn and all their soybeans. I mean, I get that China's a big country. I'm not sure if they're storing it in old Olympic swimming pools or what, but I really scratch my head when I hear about the amount of stocks, you know, that China supposedly has and how it's, you know, subsequently so bearish to the market. I really struggle with that mindset, but I know it's a very active mindset in the market, as evident by the recent market moves that we've been seeing here.
I mean, China's notorious for everything and basically they end up doing nothing a lot of the times. I mean, obviously they can be a good source and whatever, but you never really know. But of course it's always China, China, China. And because that's because nobody really knows what goes on there. So when you look at what's going on, what's your overall forecast just in general? Do we look like the markets can get better? I mean, I've got my opinions, but I'd like to hear yours first.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like I said, I mean, basically we're kind of, we've got that missing, you know, dip buyer sort of thing going on here on the sides of milk cartons. We're really just waiting for someone to show up and want to be an active buyer. Unfortunately, with corn and soybeans, the likelihood of that happening here, you know, much before harvest is probably pretty slim. Now, with wheat here, we're going into planting season again, and we could start to have a potential, you know, rally in place, you know, not only for because of the fact that we've dropped so hard and people start to see it's kind of a budget buy, but also we tend to see one during the start of planting just to kind of encourage those acres. I just got done talking to a fellow wheat trader here in Michigan. Well, I say here, I'm in Iowa, but I live my days like I'm in Michigan because that's the market I trade. But he said he took in 40 to 50% less on wheat this year than what he had last. And I can concur, that was exactly what I dealt with. So we really can't stand, you know, with as tight as supplies are right now locally. Now, granted, Toledo's sitting on, you know, millions upon millions of bushels of wheat, some of it deliverable, some of it not. But with the Michigan market, which that those Toledo bushels will not move until carry disappears, with the Michigan market as tight as what it is, I can't imagine what next harvest would look like if we were to see a continuation of reduction in acreage. And right now, with the price as poor as what it is for next year and the prices as poor as what it is for these guys that didn't have bushels priced, you know, it's a true sign that we could see a continuation of that reduction in production.
So when you say reduction in production, are you going to plant something else in place, correct?
Yeah, they're going to plant less. I mean, that's pretty solid right now for most of the guys that I talk to, is that they are going to plant less wheat again. Now, I have some that hedged $6 futures when we were up there. You know, that's encouraging to them. They're going to go ahead and keep their plans. But those that didn't, are going to be real slow to get excited to bust the planter out here this fall.
Which would make sense. Now, I mean, you know, we've seen a lot of issues. Now, in your opinion, or in your, you would know for a fact more likely than I would, what is the best crop? If everything being equal, what would be, what's mm-hmm. What's the most profitable crop?
The most profitable right now, with, you know, just looking at everything, saying your land cost is equal for everyone and blah, blah, blah. On paper, at this point, the most profitable has been soybeans. If you can achieve your normal yield, soybeans has been extremely profitable. Food grade soybeans, you know, on our math is, have been the most profitable for our growers, but that's not really an option for everyone. You've got to have a market for a non-GMO food grade bean like we handle that goes directly into Asia or something like that. That's been the most profitable, followed by, you know, there's some specialty crops out there, but if you're just looking at corn, soybeans, and wheat, pretty much you're looking at soybeans, and then wheat and corn is kind of a toss-up between what you're going to lose the most money on from a production standpoint at these current prices.
Right. Well, yeah, we know that. But if everything were, you know, let's say we were at, you know, a few weeks ago, we were at $10 beans, $6 mm-hmm. wheat, $6 wheat and $4.10 corn. What's the best to own? What's the best to be able to sell out of that?
At $4.10 corn and $6 wheat, you're competing, at least in Michigan. Now, it's hard for me to tell you elsewhere just because I'm not, you know, like Southern Plains wheat yields are really, really poor compared to Michigan's wheat. Like we can yield 90, we average 90 bushels to the acre on yield, which is nearly double what most producers in the Southern Plains will tell you they can do. You know, hard red wheat doesn't tend to yield as well. So in Michigan, wheat was the moneymaker at $6.
Okay.
Plain and simple.
That makes sense. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish.
Yeah. But elsewhere, you know, if you were to take that yield capability away from Michigan and put it back to, you know, national levels, then soybeans would have been the major moneymaker for most, and corn would have been a second place. $6 wheat, even at $6, is as crazy as it sounds in wheat. It's hard because wheat is such an intensive crop to produce. It's hard to guarantee profitability, you know, even at $6.
Now, what makes wheat so hard to produce?
It's just it's a lot of people will joke and call it a cockroach. Like it's very, very difficult to kill wheat, which is true. I mean, you can get some bushels of production out of wheat, you know, basically no matter what. The Southern Plains proved that to us this year with snow and you know, locusts and acts of God against them, basically still being able to pull a reasonable production out of their hinies. But it takes a lot of nitrogen. So it takes a lot of inputs. You've got to make sure that you use fungicide as well, which will help protect it from just scab and other diseases that can happen in the summertime with moisture and heat. So you have to use that. And, you know, you just basically you're producing a food product. So you have to make sure you have, you know, no toxins, no sprouts. It's got to be harvested at the right time, you know, this, that, and the other thing. It's just a little bit more intensive than other things. Or at the very least, for what you get out of it, the costs tend to be a little bit higher from a ratio perspective.
All right. And, you know, we're going to come back with you, my darling, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and the vice of the grains of love. We're going to come back with her in a minute here. So we'll be right back with more from Angie. And you see where she's pointing to on some of the things that are going on in the world and, you know, in the grain markets and the challenges that do exist. And I think it's something that's important that we all understand. And, of course, that's part of the trading world as well. And those are things that I think are, you know, again, they become very important because markets are markets and they all trade the same. So it's up to you to understand that, you know, don't try to overthink it, over-opinionate yourself, but to keep yourself in that best position. In the meantime, you know, we talk to Angie all the time, and she likes BarkBox.com, and of course, so do we, and that's getBarkBox.com, and you / The Bubba Show, and of course, you get one free month, and also get your dog delivered every month, some great toys and some great treats. So check them out as well as libertytalk.fm. And you can download the Bubba Show as well as the Sporting Edge every single day and the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And don't forget about me, Bubba's Bottom Line, available to you at BubbaTrading.com. You can go check that out. It's all free. In the meantime, we're going to step out here for break, and we will be right back with more from Angie Setzer after break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, my friend Angie Setzer. All right, Angie. So, you know, we talk about different prices. Now, what do you think it takes capital-wise for a farmer? How much do you think they borrow a year just to get their crop in the ground and just to get themselves ready to make money? What do you think those costs are? Do you know?
Well, you could say for an average producer, you would have to figure around, you know, from what I've been told with everything or what we've looked at, I mean, you're looking at between $300 to $500 an acre, I would say, of just pure initial starting money to get going. So if you have 1,000 acres, excuse me, you're looking at $300,000, $500,000. It is not out of the question for a guy to start, you know, $1 million, you could say, in the hole.
Right.
I hate to say in the hole, because obviously, you know, what you're putting into the ground has some sort of equity. But it's hard to say a seed in soil has an equitable position. You know what I mean? You look at this piece of ground. It has equity to it.
Yeah, that piece of ground is worth $1 million. And that's without selling the land. Yeah. Isn't that typical based on when we know what you and I both have talked about in the past about how the farmers, they like to gamble? I mean, again, they own it. It's in the ground. They want to fire up more, right? It's like that's why it's so hard to get them to want to go ahead and hedge out their stuff, because they just think they can go up forever. And we all know we're experiencing, I would say this period has been one of the darkest periods in a long time. And not because they're lower, but because they just every day they just pound them every single day. Boom.
Yeah.
Boom. You know, since the FDA report, we've been basically down almost every day, and it's just a grind. And one of the things I look at, Angie, and this is what I said, I had my thoughts earlier. I mean, I see this as probably a pretty good buying opportunity. And here's my reasoning. You know, again, I'm not a farmer. I don't play one on TV, right? I don't pretend that I know all the ins and outs. I know what the input costs are. That part, I understand the business part of it. I don't understand the day-to-day work of it. But what I do know is that from a trading standpoint, that I believe that the commercials are trying to short the crap out of this. And I think that you're seeing a market that is so totally oversold here. Now, it could be more oversold. Again, there's no law that says it has to turn around. But I think that they're doing this on extremely light volume, trying to break the spirit and break the heart and have somebody puke and panic in here. Okay, that's my thoughts. And I think they're going to get it stuck up their potatoes, because I think we're going to see, you know, after Labor Day, you know, we get some action back in the market, you get some traders back, and I think some guys are going to start to bid them up, and these guys are going to be forced to cover. That's my opinion. Any thought to that?
Well, I agree. I think it's the possibility is really there. And I mean, I'm just looking right now at a map that is discussing, you know, basically the 14-day forecast is indicating that there are some pretty significant frost risks prevalent for much of Minnesota, Wisconsin, northern Iowa, parts of the Dakotas, you know, and things like that. Now, we always talk about the possibility or what would happen if we would see an early frost or something, and what that would mean or what that could mean for the market. But the reality is we haven't seen, you know, forecasts kind of look like this for 4 weeks or 2 weeks out, excuse me, at least in my recent memory. Now, a frost wouldn't necessarily kill the crop, but it would definitely ding it. It would definitely hurt it. In years that we've experienced early frost, it's difficult to get it to dry down. It'll take yield off 20 to 40%, depending. The quality is really poor, you know, things of that nature. So a frost would be a game changer. Of course, that's your left field game changer. On the other side of things, I think that, you know, eventually we're going to see some buyers return. But right now, there's a lot of factors in the market that would really indicate that the beatings will continue until morale improves. And, you know, unfortunately, we haven't really seen those who should be greatest impacted by these market moves really flinch. You know what I mean? Like, your deer stock is still trading relatively decent, and they still act very confident in the future. You know, your Monsantos or your big input providers of the world seem to be functioning just fine. You know, so the pain has really been limited, you know, maybe to the grain handlers, your elevators. You've seen, you know, like Dreyfus and Bunge and some of these other major grain handling companies of the world struggle with some poor profit margins, you know, but really it's been isolated to the farmer. And I would venture, unfortunately, that until everyone really feels it, you know, I question how long it could go. But short term wise, I hope that they can let their boot off the neck of the American farmer here pretty soon, because there are a lot of guys. You know, I just had a farmer tell me yesterday, "Angie, this is getting past the point of being funny." You know, and in farmer translation, that is, I don't really want to watch this anymore, and I'm kind of tired of looking at it. So, you know, it is getting really, really painful for those that are working directly with these guys out in the countryside.
No, I mean, again, it is a frustrating, but fortunately, we know the old timers, if they can, they'll store it. You know, they're not going to get involved in this.
Oh, yeah.
This,
or their heads. Yes. I mean, you said it earlier. They had $10 beans. They had $6 wheat. They had $4 corn. You know, it's not as though everyone is still sitting here naked. There are a lot of guys that were really aggressive when that market gave them opportunity. Those guys will be fine. And, you know, there are other guys who have managed their last year's crop fine, and they have enough money to get into the new year. Now, it's the guys that, you know, are panicking or being forced to sell all of the old crop that they carried forward. I mean, there are customers out there that have several hundred thousand of unpriced bushels that are sitting in commercial storage, you know, that I don't even want to get started talking about. But those are the ones, you know, that did nothing when the market rallied that are really going to be struggling, some of which can withstand another couple of years of struggle. Others are, you know, they're their third year in of making really poor marketing decisions or maybe not adequately seeing when opportunity was presenting itself. And those will be the ones that, you know, we start to see go out of business. Now, there are others that are making conscientious decisions about leaving the industry or leaving the farming side of the industry before it gets worse. You know, we're seeing that already start to happen as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, the business is always tough, right? I mean, listen, for anybody to want to be a farmer, I mean, you know, so who's going to volunteer for basically 7 days a week worth of work, you know, dawn to dusk, right? I mean, and now we're past dawn to dusk, right? Because now we've got tractors with lights on them. I mean, you know, we've got a whole different setup now. I mean, you could, in theory, today, you could work 24 hours a day if you wanted to, basically, couldn't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And there are some that I've seen get real close to it, as scary as it is to watch. But, yeah, I mean, you've got to love it. I joke, you know, around sometimes that I was born with mud in my blood. You know, I love agriculture,
right?
But I'm still not a farmer. Like, there's a whole other level of love for their gig that, you know, a lot of us will never understand, because it's just been so ingrained in them since birth.
Right.
Really. I mean, there's been no other option in their mind what they'll do. And so they continue to see no other option in their mind as of what they can do going forward. They just continue to do it until someone steps in and tells them they can't, and God forbid, you know, that happens.
Of course. I mean, and look at it. I mean, like I said, to be a farmer, A, you got to have stones of steel, right? Because you're going to fire it up and you're going to borrow $1 million to get started. And then you're going to, most of them are going to fire up a little bit more and play with it a little bit. And of course, you know, they're not used to running it like a business. And now the business itself, you know, with a lot of the corporate farms now and a lot of guys that are running them, I mean, when the corporate guys run it, they run it like a farm, like a business. They don't give away anything. And they're working with cheap labor, right? I mean, you know, most family farms, they work with their family. I mean, you know, you get guys working huge farms by themselves where, you know, their competition, who's a corporation, they got, you know, 30 employees, you know, they're making $8 an hour, whatever it is, right? I mean, that's kind of what happens, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the struggle that some of these folks have is, you know, the ones that are running a mean, lean operation are also, it's just like you said, they're running a business. So you have to run a mean, lean operation. And so that just means for a lot of guys right now, just as you're seeing in a lot of other businesses, you know, you're not getting paid anymore, or in some instances you're getting paid less, but you're working a hell of a lot harder. And so we've seen that too. And that, unfortunately, is a really hard combo to make it through is working harder for less is even more frustrating. And, you know, and like I said, don't get me wrong. There's some guys out there that are this has been a speed bump to them. I mean, they barely notice the difference in what has happened. Of course, their checkbook's a lot less fat and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, for a good percentage of guys out there, especially young farmers, you know, there's been a huge influx of farmers that are a new generation that have started, you know, between 2007 and now. Well, 2007 was after the RFS bump, and it really, you know, I started in 2005, and I remember my boss at the time said that my start in 2005 put me ahead of, you know, some of the most seasoned veterans in the sense that everything had changed.
Hold that thought with your change when you started 2005. We'll be right back with Angie after the break. And that's our friend Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of Grain Assistance Elevator. But she's talking about change. And of course, it's interesting. You know, I was just thinking about that today. Markets, you know, corn, if you take off the ethanol value, it's under $2 corn. And I remember that back in the 90s, and I bought $2 corn and held it, and it was great. But in the meantime, Angie's being brought to you by Audible Books, and that's over 180,000 titles, 30-day free trial, free download. That's audibletrial.com/TheBubba Show. Again, that's audibletrial.com/TheBubba Show. And this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horse. We're going to step out here for a break, and we'll be right back with more from Angie. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horse, be right back. Welcome back to The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, so you're telling us about your start in 2005 and the ethanol craze had first come in, so go ahead, finish your story.
Well, I mean, in 2005, you know, with the ethanol start, you basically saw 5 billion bushel of new corn demand come online that hadn't been there. So, of course, we've now, in the last couple of years, shown that not only can we meet the requirements or meet those demands of that additional 5 billion bushel, we've shown we can outdo them. So it really is one of those things where we went from, oh my gosh, we're never going to be able to meet the demand that we're seeing between the world, you know, having to feed the world and fuel the world and yada, yada, yada. And then in the middle of that, we had a once in a generation drought take place. So not only did you see an explosive growth in demand, you also saw a significant destruction in supply happen all in a decade's time. Well, now we're kind of back to where we were prior to that, which is, I believe, a trading range of about a buck, maybe a buck 25 in corn. And we haven't, I don't think we found our new range in beans yet, but that's just because beans are such a different setup with their protein and China and all that goes along with that. But, you know, it appears as though with corn right now, at least we've found a range on December corn that's going to run probably from 325, 330 to 425 or so. Now the hardest part is meeting the needs or meeting those input requirements, without spending too much money, because the revenue that we're going to get on the the sales side is probably going to be down until we run into a supply problem. I mean, we're not going to expand demand like we did in the 2000s, you know, in the first decade of the new millennial there. So it's going to be a rough go for a lot of these guys because they started when demand was exploding. And like I said, we'd had that supply issue and there was volatility and interest and excitement. And, you know, not only did we have those two things happen, but we had, you know, inflationary fears and all of these things. So we just had the perfect storm to the upside. And now, unfortunately, we have to find, you know, kind of where our new livelihood's going to be. And it's going to be hard to generate a rally with global stocks as they are and 2 billion bushel of leftover corn. So it's, you know, I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer here, but it's going to be.
Yes, you are. You're trying to be Debbie Downer. So, I mean, we could turn around in a week. We could all of a sudden be back.
Yeah.
We could be way back up there again. You know, listen, just because, I mean, it's like any other market. Is it not like any other market?
Oh, it's just like any other market. You know, it's just one of those things that.
You're just Debbie Downer. It's okay. We still love you, even though you're Debbie Downer today, but that's okay.
Right. So when I don't get invited back, I'll know why, because I made everyone sad.
You're always invited back. You can be on anytime you want. We love having you on, but I mean, it's okay. We can all be a little depressed once in a while. But so now right. I made a call. This year I called $6 a week, which we got. Okay, so I can be happy about that. But unfortunately, I made $4.55 corn. And can I get there this year? Do I have any chance to get back there?
I don't think it'll happen this year. Okay. Now, if you say this marketing year, then sure. Between now and next June.
I step up, and I'm honest. I don't want anybody to think that I think I'm a genius. I step up. I said by the end of this year, so that's, you know, basically December means we have to be at 450 or higher, and I still think they have a chance to get there. You know, one of the things that I keep banking on, and part of my thesis on this is that, you know, if the equity markets ever break, then, you know, a lot of that money's going to be looking for places to go, and it'll always come back to the grain markets because that's a great place for alternative investing, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, right now you're seeing the dollar at significant lows, you know, so you've got that. That's supportive. You know, we still don't know what we've got for production. I mean, and so that's what I'm watching really close is I'm talking, you know, I was talking wheat basis early on. I'm watching corn basis, but I'm going to watch corn basis more over the next 6 to 8 weeks and see what happens. Because the best way to tell, you know, what we're looking at from a crop production standpoint is going to be what people are willing to pay in the middle of harvest, mid-October, stuff like that. So if we start to see basis improve as we work our way into October, you know, that's a true sign that, you know, it's a true sign that the cash bushels are not there, which tends to indicate that the production, the crop is not there. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from a 450 standpoint, it's probably going to be a relatively slim chance. But to retest recent highs, I can't say is completely out of the realm of possibility if we do see a continuation of reduction in production outlooks. If the USDA were to come out here in a couple weeks and say they're going to drop yield to 165, then yeah, we really just need, as much as we hate those darn reports
are garbage. They don't mean anything. I'm stepping up here. They don't mean crap. Those reports are garbage, and they don't mean anything anyways. And it'll come down to, in my opinion, it'll come down to the supply demand model, and it'll come down to. But here's my prediction. You ready for this? I say we're going to have a massive short squeeze because I do believe that they're well too short in these markets right now. That's my opinion. Again, this is not Angie. Yeah. This is Bubba's opinion. I think they're well short here. I think that they've got a lot of things that they've now done, and I believe that you're going to see a major squeeze in the market, and I think that you could see. Now, I don't know if we can get the 450. I mean, that is a pretty big stretch, but I think there's a lot of guys that are really short here, and you could start seeing them crawl over each other. And if that ties in together with a market sell-off, you know, the equities where people are going to start pouring in, you could really see these things take off. Now, again, I'm not certainly. I'm still not. I wouldn't make the same call today, but I do live by what I made, and I'll live with it. And I am long myself, but again, I would be happy right now with, you know, 410. I don't know that we can get the 450, but I do think if you can get a good solid short squeeze going, you could actually get the markets to really twist. Because again, one thing when the markets get, when we got short covers, right? They get a little crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, we saw the largest farmer selling take place this last rally that we had. So if you were to take into consideration how many contracts were being sold by farmers in the face of these speculators covering their shorts, it would give you an idea as to why we really couldn't get that far off the ground from a rally standpoint, you know, overall. So now that a lot of those bushels are going to be taken care of, and farmers again feel as though they have a full year to make a marketing decision, if we were to see a short squeeze take place, you know, and like I said, it's got to come from some sort of catalyst, whether it's a concern over frost, you know, and that's what the weather folks that I'm following here are saying, that there's potentially three different blasts of cold air that could take place in September. Which is way too early. I mean, we really, you know, across much of the countryside will not be able to handle, you know, temperatures below 30, 33, 34 degrees until after the 1st of October easily. Just with the late start that we've had and the slow finish that we're experiencing right now due to the cooler than normal August throughout much of the Corn Belt, you know, something of that nature takes place. You know, we're on fire, and you've already eliminated the bulk of, significant farmer holdings out there from an old crop standpoint. You know, all bets are off. But I would be perfectly happy at this point to get the opportunity again to sell above $4. And so that's what you might run into. But I would imagine that a lot of farmers, you know, after having been kind of forced or had the issue forced on them, because out here, you know, out in Iowa here, if you've got corn on commercial storage, they charge what they call a drop fee, which is a flat charge when you deliver, and then they charge you monthly storage. Well, if you keep that and don't price it, they will recharge that drop fee. So you'll get two drop fees and be charged monthly storage. And I mean, you can easily eat up a buck or more in that sense.
Right.
So a lot of those guys, right now,
big problem, right? I mean, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're getting close to the end, but I wanted to make sure that's the big problem. And that's why you have to be careful if you're going to store. I mean, obviously you would tell everybody who owns their own bins to store, but others you can't necessarily store because the cost becomes too great, correct?
Oh yeah. Commercial storage really much beyond winter months is ridiculous. I just got done telling a customer of mine, we are putting wheat on storage. I told him to write on his calendar for December 15th, have wheat sold.
That's Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains. I love her. You're so good, but we ran out of time, my dear. But you are the goddess of grains and the vice president of grain decisions elevator. As always, you're awesome. And you're welcome back anytime, Debbie Downer. You're always good. You're welcome back anytime. Thanks, Angie.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thanks.
And that was Andy Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of Grain Decisions Elevator. This is The Bubba Show, libertytalk.fm. Download the show every day. Don't forget, also get the supporting us on the weekends. And we'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station, right here on The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much. We'll see you later.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.